I'm Dave King.
I'm Alicia Reid, and a warm Rotary welcome to Unscripted, the official podcast of Rotary Magazine for Britain, Great Britain and Ireland.
Yeah, it's great to have you back for another exciting podcast, which is being recorded from the warmish, and we've got a cup of tea here, studios of Swindon 105.5. And we've got Shirley, who's at the controls today. Shirley, fresh from planting trees at the weekend in Swindon in her role with the Lord Lieutenancy. So she's sorting us all out today.
And she's going from trees to wires because she'll be trying to keep us under control and to time as we welcome a fantastic lineup on speakers for episode 5.
So, December issue. Have you got your Christmas lights up yet?
No, they're still in the shed.
When do they go up?
I might put a couple of trees up a week before, but I'm going to call those birthday trees.
Oh, wait, you have a birthday?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
Big one or not?
Middling.
Middling. Okay, so middling presents.
Yes.
And when do the decorations go down?
Well, sometimes I take them down on Boxing Day.
I kind of
like to clean up a little bit.
Very good. So tell us what's on the show today then.
Oh, so I know our listeners are dying to know what's on the menu for today's episode, and I am loving the mix and match that we have for you today. So from Bromley Football Club, we will be speaking to Jeff Hutton, who is the chief executive of the Bromley Football Club Community Trust, which I have learned is a League Two club in southeast London on the fringes of Kent.
Yeah, they're never quite sure whether it's London or Kent. It's somewhere,
it's somewhere over there. Yes, it's near the big city. They have taken steps outside the usual lines of the football pitch and become a model of how sports organisations can function as community anchors, working closely with the Rotary Clubs in Bromley. And we also welcome Nan McCready, a well-known lady to many Rotarians, because she was the president of Rotary Great Britain and Ireland in 2013, and quite notably, the first ever female president of the association. And today Nan is here to give us an artistic flavour and talk about all things poetry.
Oh, at least it wasn't ballet, which we were talking about beforehand off air.
Yes.
Anyway, first guest today, really delighted to welcome Gordon McAnally. Like Nan, many people will know and have met Gordon, who is one of Rotary's nice guys. Gordon was president of Rotary International from 2023 to 2024 and has been a Rotarian, must have been very young when he was, since 1984. In fact, both Gordon and his wife, Heather, are both Rotarians, and Gordon is currently a Rotary Foundation trustee. Hello, Gordon. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Hi, Dave. Hi, Alicia. Nice to be with you.
Hello.
Are you still on a high from Scotland's qualification to the World Cup?
Oh, absolutely. That's going to run all the way through to next summer in America, I'm sure. It's certainly made up from our rugby team's performance last Sunday, so that wasn't so good.
No, but it wasn't.
That was a great night the other night, yeah.
Because I think, as I recall, you are a season ticket holder at Murrayfield, aren't you?
Yes, I've got tickets at Murrayfield, but I'm a keen football fan as well. I think you know I'm a supporter of Hibernian in Edinburgh, and they blow a bit hot and cold, but they're blowing lukewarm at the moment, so we're doing okay.
I do remember going up to meet you just before you became president, and we had a lovely trip around where you live, in sort of on the borders of Scotland there, and we went to some of the key parts of where you live there, and it's just a beautiful part of the world, isn't it? In the borders of Scotland,
it's a lovely part of Scotland actually, and it's a relatively unspoiled part of the country. I think everybody hits the border and wants to get to Edinburgh, and the Scottish border is such a lovely rural area between the two, and we're very lucky to live there, and yet very accessible. You know, 1 hour from Edinburgh, 1 hour from Newcastle upon Tyne, perfect location.
So it's now been what, 15 months since you finished as president of Rotary International?
The time goes quickly, but yes, I think I'm almost recovered now. it was a very interesting journey, an incredible journey, in fact. I remember being on a meeting with Jennifer Jones, and you'll know Jennifer Jones, she was president the year before me. I was on a meeting with her about 3 months after I finished, and we were introducing ourselves to a group of people on that call, and I said, you know, I'm Gordon McAnally, I'm a recovering president of Rotary International. And she came on and said, well, I don't like to worry you, but she said, I'm still recovering and I'm a year ahead of you. So, yeah, it takes time to readjust. But as you said, I'm now involved with the trustees of the foundation, and that's another great insight into just how much this organisation does around the world.
So just quickly reflecting back on that year, what were some of your highlights? Because I know you did a lot of travelling, but what were some of the key moments that you remember from those 12 months as president?
As you say, there was a lot of travel, and almost constant travel, actually. We were on the road a great deal of the time. I think we had 11 nights in our own home in the entire year, and six of them were at Christmas. So that gives you an idea of just how infrequently we were home. But I mean, for me, the highlights of the year weren't just the places we went to or the various heads of states we met, but it was the beneficiaries of Rotary that we met that were the highlights. It was the individual people that we met. It was the children in India who were receiving an education because of the work of Rotary. It was the children in Africa that were drinking clean water because of the work of Rotary. And of course, the children all around the world who are vaccinated against polio because of the work of Rotary. And as I go around these days, I talk much more about those individuals. I talk about the Alicias and the Daves and the Jeffs and the Nans, rather than the numbers and the figures of money we raise and that sort of thing. Because that, for me, was the most important part. I wanted to get out and do two things, actually. I wanted to get out and thank the members of Rotary for what they do, because ultimately it's not the president that does the work out of an office in Chicago. It's the members of Rotary on the ground that do it. And I wanted to get out and thank them. But I also wanted to meet the beneficiaries and to see for myself what this organisation does. And it was positively affirming to be able to travel and meet people all around the world who were benefiting from the work of Rotary.
Any surprises?
Probably the main surprise, I would say, if there was one surprise, it was that we do more than we know about. You know, I think one of the things we're very good at doing is hiding our light under a bushel. And to get out there and to see just the range of things that we were doing, that in a way did surprise me. I mean, lots of other surprises, like, you know, when our luggage did finally catch up with us at times, because we had a terrible record of losing luggage as we moved around. But no, I think probably that if there was a surprise, it was that we do even more than we realise. And it's not until you get out and drill down and see that you appreciate it.
And you get lots of souvenirs, Gordon. What was the best souvenir you got?
Well, many souvenirs. I got a racing helmet that from Ayrton that had Ayrton Senna in Brazil had. I mean, I know Ayrton Senna is no longer with us, but I have a racing helmet from Ayrton Senna. I was lucky enough, I think you probably know I'm a big Francophile and we enjoy time in France. I was made an honorary citizen of Toulouse, and I was given a gold medal by Toulouse, the mayor of Toulouse. I was also made the laureate of a peace foundation in Southeast Asia, Sinophil Peace Foundation. And that was, I realised that was not Gordon McAnally that was being made the laureate. I was made the laureate, but it was Rotary that was being recognised. And I think that was very important to see Rotary being recognised by external organisations for the work we try to do in the peace space. And so, you know, that was probably one of the most cherished possessions. But no, a lot of different things, yeah.
We're going to talk about mental health with Jeff shortly and one of the projects that they're dealing with there. But clearly, during your year as president, mental health was the key theme. That was one of the themes that you really wanted to put across. And it's not an easy one to do, isn't it? You could have chosen much easier themes to convey. But how do you think it went? What were some of the messages you were trying to convey, and how do you think they were received?
Well, you're right. One of the great privileges of serving as president is that you are allowed to put forward particular issues, particular matters that you're interested in and that you feel Rotary might get involved in. I have to say, I was overwhelmed by the response to this idea that Rotary should become involved in the mental health space. I think you know why I wanted to introduce the concept of mental health to the Rotary world. And I lost my brother just 11 years ago to suicide. And one of the things I wanted to do was break down some of the stigma. You know, we all talk very freely about our physical health. I think sometimes we talk too freely about our physical health, in fact. But we very rarely talk about our mental health. And I think that's one of the issues. You know, people's mental health deteriorates because they don't have the confidence or even the ability to talk about it. So I wanted to try and break down the stigma. But I think what I did realize as we began to open the conversation up was that it wasn't so much that I was unlocking a door for Rotary as opening a door that was already ajar, because Rotary has been working in many ways in the mental health space for a long time. And just the other week, I was trying to pull together a list of some of the things that Rotary has been doing in the last couple of years in the mental health space. And, you know, I thought I might come up with a one-page list of what we were involved with. Well, this ran to page after page after page. You know, projects being run locally, you know, in cities, in the countryside. You know, projects like the wonderful project that Jeff and his team there in Bromley are doing. On the surface, they might seem like very simple things, but they are so important when it comes to the mental health space. And mental health and well-being. I think it's important that we talk about well-being as well. You know, it's all wrapped up in the one thing. So no, I've been overwhelmed, and I think one of the nicest things is that it didn't stop when I stopped being president. You know, Rotary is continuing to work in the mental health space. I mean, only recently here in Britain and Ireland, we've established a mental health and well-being team in Rotary to actually drive forward that initiative. And it's fantastic to see that it doesn't matter who's the president. It's the fact that we've got this long game with mental health, because you're not going to solve all the mental health issues of the world in 12 months. It's a long game, and we're in it for the long run. And I think Rotary can become recognised as a leader in community mental health.
I know that Rotary GB&I has been involved closely with Bipolar UK, and I know that's something you're very familiar with.
Yeah, I think we've just recently actually concluded a 3-year partnership with Bipolar UK. We worked with them, and they asked if I would be their one of their ambassadors, which was very nice. But I think we recognise bipolar is one of many mental health concerns. And I think that's perhaps why at Britain and Ireland we have decided to move on and create our own mental health space, our own mental health team, so that we can look at all the different mental health initiatives. Because, you know, there are issues affecting young children, there are issues affecting teenagers, there are issues affecting the elderly. You know, there's nothing worse for mental health than loneliness. And that's why I'm excited to hear even more about Jeff's project that is addressing the issue of loneliness among people and bringing them into the football community, which is a wonderful way to bring them together.
But do you feel that really from your year you've helped to start the conversation?
Well, I suppose I have. I mean, I don't want to be so bold as to say, yes, I have done a great job. I think we have done a great job. I think, you know, as I said, I don't think I so much unlocked a door as opened a door a bit wider that was already ajar. And I think that's an important distinction. I think you know me well enough, Dave. I'm not particularly ego driven. It's not about what I can achieve, it's about what we can achieve as an organisation. And so that's the driver.
Gordon, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Gordon. And it's great to have you on the podcast. And please stay with us, actually, as we welcome our next guest, Jeff Hutton. So, as I mentioned earlier, Jeff is the chief executive of Bromley Football Club's Community Trust, and they've been teaming up with Rotary Clubs in Bromley, and together they've created some heartwarming drives to tackle loneliness amongst the older adults in the area. A wonderful success story, which we're going to talk about today, is the Ravens Chat, held weekly at the Hayes Lane Stadium. And this is where members of the local community know that they can just come along and meet for some tea, some chat, some activities, and some warm mutual support. So, Jeff, a very warm welcome here to Unscripted.
Thank you very much. Lovely to meet you all.
What I would love to know is, what is it that you saw in your community that made you think we need to do something?
Ravens Chat itself actually came as a result of the COVID pandemic. I've been at the football club since I was 15, 16. I'm now 35, so I've seen quite a lot at the time, a lot of change at the football club. And one of the most surreal moments during the pandemic, we were calling around our season ticket holders, you know, checking in with supporters. And I've walked past our main stand for over a decade and seen many familiar faces in there, 250, predominantly blokes. And I remember ringing up one of the season ticket holders, Bill, and I was asking him, you know, how's he doing? I knew he lived on his own. Was there anything that we could do? And I asked him how Peter was. And he went, who's Peter? And I went, Peter, he sits next to you in the stand. And he was like, oh, is that his name? I was like, you've been sitting next to each other for years. He went, oh, yeah, no, I know. Yeah, no, he's a lovely guy. He said, but I've never really, you know, I didn't know that was his name. I never really got to know him. I was like, really? And then in those conversations, you realise that for some of them, Saturdays and the match days were one of the only sort of connection points of people, you know, and that the idea around the isolation and how that has even been exasperated, I suppose, by the COVID pandemic. And when we sort of came out the other side of it, it was a case of, OK, what other reason can we give people to come to the football club to get together? And that was literally it. We thought, you know what, we'll do a couple of hours, get a group together, see if anybody's interested. And we had over 60 attend our first session at the football club. Yeah, just sparked conversations, connections. No massive strategic aim behind it whatsoever, apart from, can we get people together and give them a space and facilitate that? And that's just, it's all sort of stemmed from there, really. And that's led to other projects, whether that's sporting memories for those with dementia, military veterans that are in our area. We've got the highest concentration of military veterans in Bromley. Probably helped us understand maybe our role in that wider community. And quite often for football club, it's around younger kids and football sessions and football coaching. But actually, we've got so many touch points with so many parts of our community, that sometimes just opening the doors, being able to facilitate something, is often enough to start a whole new project or a whole new idea. And that's sort of what Ravens Chat was, really.
What was the original demographic of that first meeting?
Over 50s, predominantly male, unhappy football supporters that hadn't watched football for a while. Luckily, the football they had seen, we'd done okay. I think we were just on the brink of the playoffs at the time. But within three or four sessions, it was then partners, it was then friends, people that had never been to the football club before, just that general word of mouth, and hopefully that, whatever it was, that feeling or that the connection they got in that short time with us, it just sort of spread from there, really. And now we've got a real, complete, mixed, diverse audience with us every Thursday. Yeah, it's been a real sort of game changer for us, and sort of has helped us identify our role and how we can help and how we can support outside of our football stadium.
So it sounds like it very quickly morphed into something which you realised was a much wider issue and of much wider interest than the original idea of the football club.
100%, definitely. Like I say, people that I had presumed, and I know Gordon touching it around maybe the stigma around mental health and talking and conversations, you know, the people that I had seen sit next to each other in a football stand 90 minutes every Saturday for years, and yet as two blokes, for example, didn't know each other's names, didn't know that they lived around the corner from each other, didn't know they had the same hobby, and all of a sudden they've formed that connection and they've got a friendship outside of just the Saturday match days. And, you know, just for that one example was like, wow, okay, you know, there is really something here. And then, like you say, COVID just, you know, really heightened everybody's awareness of, we're digitally more connected than we've ever been, but probably physically further apart than we've ever been.
my experience is more Royal Ballet than it is Bromley Football Club. So someone like me, would I have a place there?
100%. We've ended up bringing the whole community together, and I think probably the actual introduction of yourselves and Rotary into that group, and Christine Atkinson from Bromley Borough Rotary has been amazing for us. She's really sort of glued us in, and a bit like Gordon said, maybe our door's ajar and look, we're open, you can come. She's just come in, completely smashed the door down and opened us up to sort of wider community and made people aware that, yes, we're a football club, but it's not just about football. All ages really that are coming together, and, you know, even to the point where we have our under-18s and our under-21 players coming in and joining in with the bingo once a week and stuff like that. And I've got over 50s. We have male, female, all ages. And actually, I think our connection with Rotary and Christine Atkinson and Bromley Borough Rotary really helped us sort of expand the whole project, really, in a sense. A bit like Gordon mentioned, maybe our door was ajar. It was half ajar and people were half aware of what we were doing, but she just came down, knocked through the door, let the whole community know that, yes, we're a football club, but it wasn't just about football. Yeah, like I say, just really opened up the project to everybody. And I think the volunteer network as well that Rotary have in place just allowed us to sort of expand that provision, you know, and have up to 100 people every Thursday. And like I said, most recently we've had our under-21s, under-18 Bromley players get involved, come along on the Thursday, join in the bingo, join in the social element of it. And it's quite unique, really, to see 17, 18-year-olds who've got a connection with the club but maybe don't fully understand its history, and then sitting down, having a cup of tea with Roy Oliver, our Bromley boy, who's been coming to Bromley for 50-plus years and can really, you know, share the power of the badge and what it's done for his own life and what it's meant for that, his connection with the fan base and stuff like that. It's something quite special.
It sounds like you've got the magical formula there that a lot of Rotary clubs would actually envy quite a lot, where you've got the diversity of the age ranges and the interest. So what is it then that happens on a Thursday? Can you paint us a picture? So if I was to come along on a Thursday...
Yeah, of course. So we're based at the football club. We're very fortunate. We have a Broomfields Bar and Kitchen, which obviously on a match day will cater for 500 plus football goers. But during the week is very much our community hub for the community trust. So we're able to run all of our activities out of there. The chairman of the football club, Robin Stanton-Gleaves, and the leadership team at the football club are fantastic. They donate use of the facilities to the community trust. You know, and we're really quite fortunate compared to some other football charities there to have real access to the home of the football club. But yeah, we're here 11 to 1 every Thursday. Teas and coffees are put on. We've got a lovely area in Broomfields. Music's going. I suppose like any of these projects, once you start, all of a sudden there's a little group that can see the bigger picture of the project and wants to volunteer and have their own idea about how they can shape it. And we've been really keen to try and keep it participant-led, you know, co-designed really by the people that it's, you know, actually benefiting. And like I say, Christine Atkinson and her experience with Rotary and the volunteering and the coordinating of all of that has been priceless for us. But yeah, it's really relaxed. Like I say, tea and coffee. You've got your regulars, you've got your non-regulars. I would say every single week, 10-15% of those that are attending are coming for the first time. Not all of them have a connection with the football club. It's been word of mouth from other people that have turned up. Yeah, the group have gone through various different ideas, and sometimes we're bringing in our other local organisations. So we've obviously got London Biggin Hill Airport based just around the corner from us. We spoke about historic legacy bits that we could bring in, and they had a Dam Busters talk that we hosted at the football club. Little things like that, really. So we've tried to make it as much participant-led as possible. And even though we are almost 3 years in now, it's still very much developing on a weekly basis. And it's just exciting, really, to see where we can take it.
So when people come and visit you for the first time, have you noticed anything in particular that they seem to have as a strong need?
I just think it's connection. I think it's, you know, being able to speak with others, to be able to share. Like I say, I do think we're you know, digitally more connected than ever, but certainly physically apart. And I think isolation is a large part. And quite often with the ages, you find that it is people that are separated or widowed, you know, and quite often it is an activity and a reason to get out of the house. And we've just got a fabulous core of volunteers within that group that, I can't say the word traps, but I was going to say take them under their wing and, you know, make them feel a part of something, can give them a sense of belonging. It's not too surprising, really. I think all of us, even in our own lives and those that have been leaders and that, come up on our own mental health challenges or our own moments of complete isolation where you feel lonely, despite potentially leading a group of 30 people and working in a huge team and stuff. And that's in what is maybe, at my point in life, a really fulfilling life, a really purposeful 24/7 job. And yeah, I still feel like that. So I can imagine that people that have, retired, had a fantastic life, I can imagine how quickly it can, it can change. So I think definitely, I think it's just been connection. I just think that's been a massive thing. We've seen that day in, day out, and that's been the same with our veterans hub. Veterans hub, military veterans hub, you'd imagine completely ex-military, that's it. But it's been their partners, and then sadly we've lost some of, those veterans, but their partners have still come. But they've got that connection with the group and with the audience, and it's given them a sense of belonging and purpose. Yeah, it's just fantastic to see on a weekly basis.
And if I can bring Gordon in here and ask you, Gordon, do you think that this model is transferable to other football clubs around the world?
I think it could be. I mean, I think, Jeff's hit the nail on the head when he talks about the isolation being the issue. And basically we are social animals and we want that social interaction. And I think certainly brought home to the fact that, we all became isolated, but people become isolated for other reasons as well. I think the great thing about the football club being behind this, and I would extend it, as a rugby man as well, I would extend it to rugby clubs, community rugby clubs, is that it's a safe space for people to come together. You mentioned to somebody that you're going down to the football club on a Thursday morning, and that's a safe space. And then you have that opportunity to come together. Yeah, I mean, I see no reason why the model, that sort of model, couldn't be extended. I know there's one Rotary club in Scotland, I think it's through in the Glasgow area, who have a similar sort of initiative. I don't think it's quite as well developed as your one is there in Bromley yet, but a similar sort of initiative that came out of the pandemic and brought people together who otherwise weren't seeing people and weren't having that social interaction that I think ultimately we all crave. Sometimes when you're very busy and you're among people all the time, you think, yeah, it'd be great just to get some peace and quiet. I want to be on my own for a while. But I don't know about any of the others on this call. I like to be on my own for a while. And then after about 20 minutes or half an hour, I'm thinking, so who can I see? What can I do? Who can I speak to? So no, I mean, I would see no reason why this couldn't be replicated elsewhere.
Exciting. And Jeff, if I could ask you, if there was one simple task that you could advise other clubs to do in order to try and replicate what you've managed to achieve there, what would that simple thing be?
Just open your doors. Open your doors, listen to the community you've already got on your doorstep, which is your fan base, and they will all know people that could do with some help or could do with a connection and a reason and a purpose. And I just think football clubs are so well placed to do that, and sporting clubs in general are so well placed to do that.
Sorry, I was going to come in there if I may and just ask Jeff, how did you find Rotary, or how did Rotary find you in terms of this? Because I think the club itself, the Football Club Trust, started the initiative, and then you talk
Yes.
about Christine Atkinson, and so how did you find each other? I'm curious to know how that came about.
Yeah, you know what? It's been so long ago. I'm not even sure I remember. I'm sure it came via two of our participants who I believe may have been members. And Christine came along, and as she always does with everything that we do, could just see the bigger picture quicker than we could. Really understood. Maybe a need that we were meeting, and just connected us with others. And even to the point now where we've got volunteer programs running on match days, and we've got members of Rotary and members of the Ravens chat that are now volunteering with us on a match day. So now they've got a purpose and a role and a giving back opportunity. I didn't see that when we started the project. I didn't think that that would be one of the outcomes of that. So her experience, and I'm sure no doubt Rotary in general, and the fact that you guys share best practice amongst all your organizations, that's happening in the sporting world now. And I think bits like the EFL are pulling all of these great examples together and hopefully helping spread it.
Thank you for that for now. And we will come back because I think there's more that we can talk on that. And I know that our next guest, Nan, will also have some points that she want to bring up.
We're change makers, problem solvers, and community builders. We are Rotary. And together, there's no limit to what we can accomplish. Take action with us. Find out more at rotary.org/action.
You're listening to Rotary Unscripted.
Welcome, Nan McCreedy, friend of the show. Nan is a distinguished Rotarian who made history, 2013-2014, as the first woman to serve as president of the then Rotary International in Great Britain and Ireland. We no longer have presidents now. We've got chairs of boards. Anyway, it still was a huge honour nonetheless. And in fact, Nan, I was just looking through some figures here. When you were president, there were 53,000 Rotarians. Now there's 35,000. Anyway.
It wasn't my fault, honest.
Absolutely not. But you know what? I was doing my research, and your priority themes then were attracting new members with a specific emphasis on women and younger people, increasing flexibility in club formats such as breakfast meetings, home-based e-clubs, and promoting greater community engagement. And I know now that you are actually a member of an e-club, aren't you?
I'm an honorary member of an e-club, and I'm also a direct member of a district hub.
Well, how does the direct member work for yourself?
Well, the direct member works for me because I don't want to be fixed to sort of one day a week going to a meeting and what have you. And when the weather's bad, I don't like going out and what have you. So with the hub, you can go to other clubs who are running things, they're running events, they want help. You know, you can go and help out with any of those. There's one club who always sends me their schedule for their next meeting, you know, the next dinner meeting to go and join them. But it allows me to do other things like being an e-club honorary member and doing other things. I'm also involved at national level with the, strangely enough, mental health and wellbeing team, which I'm sure Gordon will be pleased to know we're promoting. So it allows me to do that. And I've also just undertaken training to be a mediator because, unfortunately, in Rotary, everybody's lovely. But they do get themselves in a bit of a fix sometimes, and they have arguments, and they can't necessarily find the way out themselves. Well, I think Gordon will appreciate this. It was tiring, but it was fabulous. It was an amazing experience. It was an honour. I mean, I really was surprised to when I put my hat in the ring. I didn't know that I would get anywhere, but I was elected straight away. So I was really chuffed. I think is the word. But yeah, there's a lot of planning, a lot of work, a lot of travel. And my late husband very kindly put up with all of it and went with me to all the places I was going to, which was, you know, was good because he hadn't really been very much involved prior to that. So it was, you know, a bit of a shock to him. But yeah, it was great. And I still meet up with my team once a year. And it's lovely to see them. And they are all doing very well.
Would you have ever aspired to become president of Rotary International?
No. I did at one point think about standing to be a director, but that was just when my husband was taken ill. So therefore, I wasn't able to even think about going forward. And to be honest, I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I was the first of one kind without having to follow up with other things. Mm. I couldn't do that job at all, Gordon, not for a pension. You did so much travelling and so much hard work. It was absolutely amazing. So thank you for doing it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
So Nan, just talking about your time since then with Rotary, how are you enjoying your Rotary? Because, I mean, you're still very active within it, and we're going to come on to the poetry in a second, but you are very active within the Rotary that you do.
Unfortunately, the club I was with when I was president folded a few years later because of lack of numbers, you know, a problem that a lot of clubs have. I then joined another club, but I had a bit of a bad experience, which is why I actually left for about 18 months, hence the honorary membership of the e-club. But now I'm back into the direct membership. It's great. I can do all sorts of things that, you know, that interest me, but hopefully will help other people too.
So let's talk poetry. We've talked ballet, and now we're going to talk poetry. We've been very creative tonight. Nan, yourself and Adrian Brewer from the Isle of Wight are heavily involved in this poetry competition. I know Gordon was involved in helping with the presentation at one of his conventions. So just tell us a little more about what the poetry competition is and how it works.
Okay, well, it was Adrian's brainchild. I only sort of come along to help when I can. He does most of the hard work. He may well be known to people who are listening as the man from the Rotary Water Barrel Project. Roll Out the Barrel Project. But he's got this thing and he thinks that poetry is a good way for communication and for people to get to know each other and communicate. he came up with the idea and floated it, and then he wanted to do the presentations in the convention. He said to me, "You know Gordon and Heather, don't you?" And I said, "Yes, as you do." And I said, "Okay." So I actually contacted Heather, and she was instrumental in getting us onto the House of Friendship stage in the convention in Singapore. So thank her again for me, Gordon, because that was really great what she did. And she helped us to present the prizes in Singapore. Last year in Calgary, Stephanie Urchick actually did all the presentation herself. She didn't need any help. She had a script and she just presented all the prizes. So, and as she put it, it is a wonderful communication tool which will hopefully help with peace. I mean, we're all very firmly focused on peace, but she believes that the poetry thing is a way of communicating peace.
So with the competition itself, Nan, how does it work? So there's two sections, isn't there?
There is a website, rotarypoetry.org, and people can go on there and upload their poems. And this year, to try and encourage more involvement, we're making it free. People do not have to donate. But there is a donate button on the website, and people can give something, because it's all going to End Polio Now and the foundation and things like that. So people can donate. And this year, just to make it difficult for you, there are four categories. There are limericks, sonnets, a category for peace in the world, a bit like Unite for Good. And then another category if you don't think your poem fits into any of those. Okay, so people go on, upload their poem, and then it comes to us, and it becomes anonymized, so that the judges do not know where the poem has come from. And then it goes to our very able judges, very distinguished judges. We've got five of them from all over the world. And they decide in each category. And then they also decide on an overall winner of the Rotary Poet of the Year. It is open to anyone. It can be, we actually are trying to promote that Rota Kids Interact can participate as well. Rotaractors, Rotarians, families, friends. They don't even have to be Rotarians. So, they just want to write a poem and that's it.
So do you ever have groups of people teaming together to make a poem?
We haven't so far, but I suppose that's something we'll have to look out for. A bit like we have to look out for AI.
Oh, we were just talking about that. Yes.
We have said that if a club wants to submit a poem, you know, a joint effort, that they can.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of actually marking university papers right now, and AI is a real tricky one, isn't it? And I'm just trying to work out who is using ChatGPT or whatever.
We had one last year who actually won a section. Oh, well, he said, mostly it was AI. He said, I'm using it. He was an incoming DG. He said, mostly I'm using it for my speech. So at least he fessed up, so we let it go.
Gordon, Jeff, what do you like with poetry?
Yeah, not wonderful, but I've definitely just got a new idea for our Ravens chat group next week.
Yeah,
brilliant.
That'd be great.
That'd be great. Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. I'm interested in the way it's developing, and I'm delighted that it is developing, because I remember when you first came with the idea. What sort of buy-in are you getting from around the world for this? Are you getting a lot of interest from other parts of the world?
One of the reasons we've made it free is because in places like India, they can't use PayPal. We've had difficulties. So if it's free, they don't have to worry about that. So we hopefully will get more people. But yes, we've had visitors. We've had winners from South America, from Central America, from the States, from the UK. One of our first winners was from Hong Kong. So yeah, excellent. It is an international thing. And as I say, there's a prize for each category, and then there's an overall prize for the overall winner.
Will you be presenting this year's iteration in Taipei at the convention? Or?
Francesco has agreed that he will support it and do that. I'm talking to John, because I know John DiGiorgio.
Hey, Nan, I've got a question for you. What have Francesco and Gordon got in common? So Francesco Arezzo is the president of Rotary International, the current president. What has
the dentist.
Exactly. What is it about dentists, yeah. Eh?
The interesting thing is, Dave, of course, that I was the first ever dentist to be president of Rotary International after 120 years. And 2 years later, we have a second dentist. All the dentists out there on this listening to this better be careful. They might be Rotary International president 2 years from now.
It's because when they've got their hands in your mouth, that's when they ask you a question. You can't answer them.
Nand, you were mentioning earlier about mental health, and clearly that's been a theme of today. What's your thoughts on Rotary's place in that mental health discussion?
I think that we have the ability to provide spaces, a bit like Jeff was saying, where people can come and feel safe and, talk to other people with similar beliefs. What we're actually doing at national level through the humanitarian team is we're looking at different signposting for different problems like loneliness, like dementia, things like that, so that we can tell clubs where there are facilities that are available that they could perhaps build on or actually point some of their members or some of their friends to use.
What have you noticed in your experience is the biggest change in the mental health field since you've been focusing on it?
I think the biggest change all came from what Jeff was saying, from COVID. I mean, I personally felt very much a problem when COVID hit because I'd lost my husband and I was on my own. And I think that it's getting people now to talk about the problem and to say what it is they feel. Again, the loneliness problem, it's the isolation. It's getting people to be able to come together and to say, yeah, you know, I experienced that and this is what I did. And oh, I didn't know about that. So, yeah, it's isolation, I think, is a problem.
Jeff, you mentioned that you get some very young people coming to your club. And do you think there's any particular changes in the technical field that affect them that perhaps didn't exist 10, 20 years ago?
Yeah, whatever it is, you know, even if it's the worst of the worst when it comes to bullying and stuff like that, you know, that used to be confined to school. You could go home, you're away from it. Now it's social media, you're seeing it. You're seeing it constantly on your phone. So there's definitely been those challenges. But I think further to what Nan was saying, I think we're seeing it more and more now in the UK, and I think the NHS are sort of starting to see it. It's great. We're providing the spaces and we're getting these people together and we're able to at least support and fix them, the isolation bit. Then it is those other challenges that are maybe being identified and where you can signpost and how you connect to. And we're just in the process of partnering with our local NHS ICB as part of a One Bromley network so that all of our volunteers are trained to then be able to signpost and they know where, you know, to be able to direct people to, but also being able to pull those services into our spaces. You know, so we've got the local GP surgeries, we've got the local PCN networks. We have 100 people here every Thursday. You know, if that is an area you're looking to support, it's here. You know, so it's just trying to connect all of those different services. There's so many people out there trying to do, you know, the really good things, but it's definitely a collaborative approach that's needed to really make an impact.
Gordon, your world tour that you did in your year as RI president, did you notice anything particular around the mental health area that stands out to you?
Well, I think to put a bit of a more positive spin on the answer to that question, Alicia, is I think one of the things that stood out to me was that people were starting to be willing to talk about it. I think we could really see a change there that, you know, even 3 or 4 years ago, and it might have been that this pandemic was the low water mark, if you like. In the last 2 or 3 years, I think people have realised that there's nothing wrong in talking about the way you're feeling. There is no reason that you shouldn't share the fact that you're feeling down, you're feeling a bit isolated, you're feeling a bit depressed, whatever. Just as you would say, you know what, I've had a headache for a couple of days. Anybody got any tips for a headache? Or I've got toothache. Does anybody know a good dentist? Or that sort of thing. So I think what we are seeing is a realisation, you know, it's that cliche, isn't it? It's good to talk, and it is good to talk. And a problem shared is a problem halved. You know, the strap line and the phrase that I've been using all along is it's not enough just to ask somebody, how are you? But you actually want to ask, how are you really? Because it's when you put the really part on the end of that question that very often people will open up. And I think that's important that we do that. But of course, if you're going to ask somebody, how are you really? You've got to be prepared to listen. And then, as Jeff said, possibly be in a position to signpost them to where they might be able to get further help. Because in Rotary, we're not the experts. You know, I'm a dentist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. So we need to be able to point people in the right direction to people that can give them better help, or to an initiative like Raven's Chat that they can benefit from and find themselves feeling better for being there.
And Nan, there's been a lot of talk this evening on this podcast about safe spaces. And you were talking about your Rotary now where you have this direct membership. So Rotary in some ways is a way of, I guess, helping mental health, because with having moved away to this more flexible form of membership, it enables more people to engage in their own time, whether they're working nights or days or whatever. So in some ways, Rotary is a platform, is it not, to help with mental health?
I think it is. And in fact, I did go to a Zoom meeting one day where there was a lady from Australia. It was the middle of the night for her, mind you. And she said that prior to this initiative that we were trying to do for mental health, she hadn't been out of the house. She didn't want to go out. She didn't want to do things. But now that she was able to join in with this group, she was able to talk about it and she was able to chat to people. And that had made such a difference to her. We are making a difference.
Jeff, you have got on this call two of the most experienced people in Rotary, I would say. Is there anything that you would like to ask them?
Oh, wow.
Dentist tips, if you like.
How do you keep it up? How do you keep going? Everyone from the outside will have an opinion on what you're trying to do and the reasoning behind it and the method. How do you silence out that and just plough on with the bigger purpose?
If I may, and I should be letting ladies go first here, but if I may, I would say, and I mentioned this earlier, how I keep up and what I say to people that might be a little bit dismissive of Rotary, and let's face it, there are people out there who are, you know, a little bit dismissive of what we do, and it's all, you know, Rotary, it's of a bygone age, etc., etc. I tell them about what we do. I have yet to meet anybody who has not been impressed when they hear exactly what we do as an organisation. And I think that is and remains one of our biggest challenges, is to get the word out there about exactly what we do. I also personally get energised by seeing what we're doing and meeting the people that are doing it. I said earlier in the programme that I wanted to get out as president. One of my two missions was to get out and thank the people for what they did. And just being among those people energises you and keeps you going to carry on doing things, because there's 1.2 million members of Rotary around the world, and they are all working their socks off to make it a slightly better place, just like Christine Atkinson is in Bromley there with the Ravens Chat Initiative. There's 1.2 million Christine Atkinsons around the world. And they're all trying to do their best for the areas that they're working in. It is just the most incredible organisation. And in fact, we're asking Jeff to ask us a question. I'd like to ask Jess a question, and that is, how soon before you become a member of one of the Rotary clubs in Bromley?
Now you sound like Christine. She's getting me there, I must admit. I've got a pin badge keeps appearing on my desk and a pamphlet as well, so it's coming.
Glad to hear it.
You bring so much to it, Jeff. It would be great if you could join Rotary. It really would.
Thank you.
And so as the sands of destiny clog the hourglass of destiny and the relentless cuckoo of eternity pops out for one last squawk, we must concede that our allotted time has flapped off like an inexperienced pigeon from Trafalgar Square. There you go, Nan. There's a bit of poetry for you. Award winning.
You can upload that. I won't even charge you for it. You can have a free entry.
Oh, so thank you very much. Well, I'm not judging, of course. Anyway, my thanks to Nan, to Gordon, to Jeff for contributing to another fantastic podcast.
Grateful thanks to the wonderful Shirley for keeping the tech alive. We love being here in the studio at Swindon 105.5. Don't forget, you can listen back to episodes we've done before. Search for Rotary Unscripted and enjoy the stories galore.
Was that poetry?
I couldn't resist it, Dave. Okay.
Thank you.
Anyway, with this is our last podcast for 2025, and we've got some great guests lined up for 2026, including the aforementioned dentist, the RI president, Francesco Arezzo, is going to be with us in 2026. However, in January's episode of Unscripted, we've lined up a strong environmental theme because we're just coming at the end of the COP summit in the climate change summit in Brazil. So we'll be focusing on that. We'll be welcoming Judith Diamond, who, among other many hats she wears, will be discussing the environmental sustainability Rotary Action Group. Gert van Jan van Dommelen will be joining us from Holland to discuss the organisation M Plastic Soup, and Phil Fletcher from Henley Rotary Club will be here in the studio chatting about the Henley Plastic Blitz.
And I'm very much looking forward to all of that. And thank you to everybody for listening to this episode of Unscripted, and festive greetings to all of our listeners. See you in the new year.
I'd love to wish everybody a very happy holiday season, and I say thank you to all the members of Rotary for everything that they do.
Yeah, just obviously love to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Tend to get a bit of time off work if you're not retired. Get down to your local football club. I know they would love to welcome you on Boxing Day over that festive period. It would mean so much to those football clubs, and I think you might be surprised what you might find.
And it's important to add, Happy New Year. Happy, peaceful and prosperous New Year.
You've been listening to Unscripted, the official podcast for Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland. If you'd like to find out more about Rotary or join us, visit rotarygbi.org. You can also read more stories in the Rotary magazine at magazine.rotarygbi.org. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then why not leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps to spread the word. And we'd love you to share this podcast with friends, family and colleagues, inside and outside of Rotary. You can also email comments or suggestions to editor@rotarygbi.org. This podcast has been recorded at the studios of Swindon 105.5.